Welcome to iRun Radio. Coming up, running and juggling to an epic finish.
We knew we were under the world record at 18 kilometers into the race, so now we knew we were 10 minutes from the finish line. And we're like, all right, we're just going to go for it, and if we tie, we tie. Whatever happens.
The joy of running New York City.
I just felt like the whole city came out to party along the race route. There was bands and DJs. I ran past people dancing in the median. There was a school band playing the Rocky theme, and everyone's just yelling for you to keep going. It's really like being a rock star for the day.
And the secret to a new best time in the half marathon.
I changed my bio on Instagram earlier this year from I am bad at training to training works. And it really comes down to following coach's advice, really for the first time in my running career.
On this edition of iRun Radio, we'll talk to a joggler. That's someone who runs and juggles at the same time, who chased a world record. A teacher who got the VIP treatment in New York, and a Toronto runner who has trained his way to some faster times. Let's get things started now with the editor and general manager of iRun, Ben Kaplan. Hello, Ben.
Good morning, sir.
Fresh from the New York City Marathon, your hometown race, and you finally got to do it. And I read what you wrote on iRun.ca about it. It sounds like you had a great experience, and like so many marathons, it was tough, it was demanding, but it was exhilarating, it was fun, and you really enjoyed the crowds in New York, didn't you?
Yeah, it was something to experience, and I certainly feel fortunate, and I really did. It really drained everything out of me, and I gave it everything I got. I drank it in, you know.
Yeah.
I was out there doing the thing, you know, as all of us do. But it was really a vibrant experience and one I'll never forget.
So tell me about it from start to finish. Just walk us through your New York experience.
I mean, almost like a metaphor. I have an uncle that I've sort of fallen out with. And he lives in Brooklyn, and I was like, I wonder if he'll be out there, but I didn't even tell him I was going to be in town. And sure enough, Brooklyn's right at the start of the race, and right at the start of the race, I see him, and it's so funny because something like maybe 52,000 people ran, and maybe upwards of almost a million people watched. But you can still run a marathon, even in those kind of crowds, and pick out somebody on the sideline, even when you don't know where they'll be or whether or not they'll be there. But I saw him, and I ran over to him, and I gave him a kiss. And it was like, you know, I hadn't spoken to him in 3 years. And so that's the start of the race. And it was a sunny, beautiful day, and everything was cool and perfect, and there was no... You know, everything was just lovely, exactly what you want. And it starts off and you're in a street party in Brooklyn and under the sun, and you just feel like you can do no wrong. I kept going. I made it through Queens. In Queens, I had more family members, and I gave a high five to my cousin, and, you know, and I'm dancing. I literally at one point I was almost dancing.
Wow.
You know, I was just, you know, I was in a shorts and a tank top, and it was just... You know, it was just gorgeous. And then gradually, as the marathon does, it started to change. You know, it started to change.
Yeah.
And
it's a little bit like a country music album, isn't it? I mean, you got the highs and the lows, right?
Well put. That's right. And then the sad songs started to play.
Yeah.
And, you know, you go across a bridge at about mile 15. And, of course, the New York Marathon is potted with bridges. You take five different bridges to cut across. It's hard to really explain, you know, for a lot of races don't have that, like what that does. But, you know, they're sort of windy and they're long and the bridges are metal and it's just, you know, I don't know. And they're just, they expand and it just goes on and, you know, it gets dark.
And there's no crowds on the bridges, right?
There's
nobody
crowds,
cheering. So you just hear the sound of footsteps.
Work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's somewhat ominous. I don't know. It's, but I mean, you know, no big deal on any given run. But, you know, by the marathon, after you've hit four of these already, you start getting tired. And what I've done every race I've ever done is I go out very quickly, and then I end up, even despite my race plan. So my race plan was like just under 3:30 was all, you know, I wanted to do. But I'm going out at like, you know, I guess 3:10, frankly. You know, and then so around mile 15, the war really began. And I'm coming up. I just did Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, which was 3 weeks ago or something like that. So So I had to drop out. Okay, I was trying to break 3 hours at 28K. It became apparent I wasn't going to be able to do that. So then rather than hobble my way to the finish line, I just sort of took myself out of the game. But I'd never done that before. You know, 25 odd marathons or whatever it is, I've never done that. I've walked through. I mean, you know, we have to stand for something, and we stand for finishing the job. But, you know, so I didn't do that. So I had that experience fresh in my legs and fresh in my mind. And it's like, you know, come hell or high water, I'm finishing this one. I'm going to go all the way to New York not to do the job.
Yeah.
But it started, oh, man, but it really started pushing me. And, you know, I was in it. I was really in the throes of the battle. And, it's not even, I looked at my splits and my pacing. It's not even that bad, but I was really fighting. Like, I was no longer, there was no bop in my step. There was no smile on my face. There was no high fives to be given. It was just, you know, I was working. And I wasn't working in that way where, like, you sort of, like in a flow. I didn't really have a flow going. I just had, like, a struggle going. But, you know, we can do it that way, too. And I did. And I dragged my carcass up to Bronx, and I took myself through Harlem, and I made myself back down to Manhattan, and I slept, which is like a Yiddish word for just kind of carrying like a heavy load on your back and making your way across space and time. And I persevered, and I pushed forward, and I went into the Central Park. And, you know, when people talk about how exhilarating that is, you know, so it's incredible and the crowd support and all of that. But I was still sort of in my mission, and I was a little purposeful and resilient and somehow scrunched up. And a guy I know saw me, and I was like sort of in my lane, and I was not moving. I was just, you know, I was very much getting this job done. I was on a mission. And I did it, my brother. I did it. 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 And I wasn't my fastest, but it was my toughest.
That's all that matters. And, you know, you've described it perfectly. That is the marathon, right? That is the journey. And that is what we learn from. And that is what we celebrate. So congratulations, because this one was special for you. You're from New York. Now you've done the New York City Marathon. You had a heck of an experience. It was epic. So congratulations, Ben. Thank you for sharing your story.
What a nice guy. I appreciate that, man. Thank you very much. Yeah, wonderful.
Ben Kaplan, iRun's editor and general manager. Coming up next, chasing a world record for joggling. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Graydon Snyder is a joggler. That's someone who runs and juggles at the same time. And a few weeks ago, he was in an epic half-marathon race in which he and another runner were chasing a world record. Graydon, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about how you got into running. I've talked with your mother before, and she's very proud of all you've done as a runner. She's often tweeted about your results, and she's emailed me to say, you should talk to this guy. And so here we are. Tell me a little bit about how this all started for you.
So you're interested. You want to know where the running first came, or the running and the juggling?
Before we get to the juggling, let's focus on the running first. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it was kind of evolved into a sport on its own for me, because when I was younger, growing up in Ottawa, it was all about skiing. So skiing in the Gatineaus, and that was a lot of fun. And I didn't start very competitively, but as the years went on, I got faster. And, you know, when the snow disappears, you go for a run, of course. It wasn't until university, or even after university, that I started to run more competitively. It was kind of a late discovery that I had a little bit of skill there. So I was running like 36 minute 10Ks, and then kind of all of a sudden, within a year of proper training, the times dropped down to like 32. So I was like, oh, okay, that was interesting. I didn't expect that. That was back in the early 2000s, where I was sort of discovering how to run fast.
Yeah, very fast, in fact. I mean, those are some impressive times. So put some pressure on you to start training harder and seeing if you can go faster than that, right?
Yeah, like, running is a very honest sport because, it's not easy to even do it half well because you can very quickly align your times with everyone else in the world and you can quickly discover just how many other fast people there are. So, you know, as soon as you get better, there's still people in front of you. it keeps you hungry, but it keeps you honest.
Yeah. Everything's relative. There's always people who are ahead of you and always people who are behind you as well. That's kind of a metaphor for life, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So from there, how did you get into running and juggling at the same time, or is it called joggling?
Yeah, so I kind of had two independent hobbies that lived parallel lives for years when I was probably 14, not even, maybe even younger. I started to juggle. I think it was actually a day camp, so I must have been more like 12 years old when I first learned to juggle, but then in my teens, I started to like juggle properly, and then in my early 20s, I was getting up to 5 balls and learning a few tricks, but it was not going to quit my day job over that. But it was a fun little pastime while
yeah,
I was
so
getting better at running.
This was something you were just doing for fun. Obviously, you weren't busking or doing anything like that with it. It was just something you were having fun with.
Yeah, exactly. Like I've seen what a professional juggler can do, and it's quite mind blowing. So I always was a firm believer that I was just doing it for hobby's sake, and not even really for performance. But the two kind of merged in when I was in my 20s. When I first tried, I'd heard of joggling, and what I found interesting about it was that there's a synchronicity that it was strangely natural. It sounds like the most ridiculous thing to juggle and run at the same time, but when you do it, like when you finally get it to happen, it's one throw for every step. So there's this kind of strangely natural feel about it once you actually get going.
What does it feel like when you're running and juggling at the same time? And how long did it take you to kind of get the hang of it?
It took about a number of years, I would say, to get it to the point that I would be willing to show people in public. It's actually really hard. It looks hard and actually is hard. I'd say 3 or 4 years of practice before I got to the point that I really had had it feeling natural. And once it does feel natural, then it actually does feel just like running. Just this extra thing on top of it, but they kind of merge together.
So you're kind of used to it now. I guess it feels a lot more natural than it used to.
Yeah. First thing you learn after coordinating your arms and legs is to not look directly at them, or you kind of get cross-eyed and look ahead of yourself. So you have to use your peripheral vision almost entirely throughout the whole time.
Now, how much slower are you running because you are juggling at the same time? How much does it slow you down?
I'd say about 20 seconds a kilometer. So for like a half marathon, normally I'm running around 3:20 per kilometer. But with juggling on top of that, I'm the Toronto, I'm running around 3:40 a kilometer, just under.
Okay. Yeah, those are fast times either way. You'd be way ahead of me even if you were juggling while you were running, and I wasn't. So now, I gather there are also some rules around this, right? If you drop a ball, you have to stop and go back. Is that how it works?
Yeah, and it's kind of like an inherent time penalty. So it's not as evil as you have to go all the way back. But if you think about every drop costs you between 5 and 10 seconds, you have a pretty good motivation not to drop. You can quickly lose minutes of time if you're really falling to pieces.
Yeah, and as you say, if it's all harmonized, then it's throwing you off your rhythm anyway. So that's a penalty in itself, as well as having to pick up the ball. What's the farthest you've run without dropping a ball? I mean, how often would you drop a ball when you're doing a half marathon or a marathon?
Let's see. I've yet to try a marathon, but okay. So the half marathon probably was over a dozen times that I dropped, which is not so bad. If I think about it, one every 2 kilometers. But the best result was it was unofficial because I didn't have anyone watching me complete the time. But I did do a 5K without dropping.
Okay. Wow. Good for you. And so is it strangely satisfying to be able to do this? Because obviously to any outsider and to somebody who's not into juggling, it looks peculiar to be running and juggling at the same time. Is it, what do you take some satisfaction from it?
Yeah, I think it's twofold. There's the satisfaction of just, you know, sometimes you just think of something's hard enough, doing it at all, let alone well, is kind of satisfying. And, you know, just you know, trying to accomplish something that you've never been able to do before, because it is so hard, and there's no way to cheat, and you can't cheat yourself. If you run and drop, it's pretty clear, cut and dry. So when you're doing well, you know it. So this kind of satisfaction of just having mastered a new skill. You know, there's plenty of crazy skills out there to learn. So it's up there with all the other silly ones I think you could get good at. No worse, no better.
Yeah.
But then for me, the second part is that when I started realizing I was getting pretty fast, there was the satisfaction of knowing that I could compete with these like world record times. So
yeah,
that was like a whole other level.
So tell me about this race in Toronto. And it really was a race. You ended up finishing 2 seconds behind another competitor, and you both broke the world half marathon joggling record.
Yeah, so going into that race, we both had registered with Guinness, so the times were going to be official. The pressure was on. So Mikkel Kaprel had set in 2014, had set a time of 1 hour, 20 minutes, and 40 seconds, which, put in perspective, my very first half marathon was about a minute slower than that. So we're not talking about a slow time to begin with.
Well, to put it in perspective, I've run 20 half marathons, and not one of them has been within 15 minutes of that. So let's put it into even further perspective that way.
It's really it was really an accomplishment. But yeah. Over the practice, I knew that I was definitely in shape to go under, and Michael Bergeron, who from Halifax, was also in shape for that. He had just set a 10K world record of 35 and a half minutes for joggling. And so we both knew we had a pretty good shot at it. I had no idea it was going to be that close. Our plan was to sort of pace each other for the most part of the race, because it didn't really make sense to, you know, go off really far ahead or anything. So we were competitive, but we kind of thought we would probably see each other in view for most of the race, but really didn't realize that we would just be neck and neck the entire way like that. So we had a friend who helped pace us, and kind of as a backup and partial guide to help us. You technically need someone to have visual contact with you to say that if you drop them, that yes, and he did indeed pick it up and
right,
whatnot. But he was pacing us, and we were both kind of pacing off of him, and just kept side by side. We knew we were under the world record at 18 kilometers into the race, so now we knew we were 10 minutes from the finish line. And like, all right, we're just going to go for it, and if we tie, we tie, whatever happens. And unfortunately, I got really tired at the end. This is the first time I'd done a half marathon joggling, and this was not his first time, and I started to fall apart at the very end, so I dropped one with 100 meters to go. So,
oh no.
Painful as it was.
Yeah.
I might have had a chance had I not made that last mistake.
But that's still a big accomplishment, breaking the world record, even though someone else broke it as well. So congratulations on that. That's phenomenal. And now you've got something to shoot for, because you know you're within striking distance if you wanted to try it again, right?
Oh yeah, I can list many mistakes that I made both in the race but also in training. So this was only my first time trying a half marathon distance. I'd actually never even tried 10K before this. So there's a lot of improvement that I can see happen. And the 5, 10, half, and full records are all something I'm thinking about.
Right on. Well, congratulations, Graydon. And you're posting some amazing times, whether you're doing it as a runner or as a joggler. Thank you so much for joining us on the show, and best of luck in the future.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That's Graydon Snyder of Montreal. Coming up next, a teacher gets some special treatment in the New York City Marathon. iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you. Lynn McQuaig is a teacher in Cornwall, Ontario, who tried many times to get into the New York City Marathon, but never succeeded. This year, though, she got a special invitation, and she's here to tell us the story. Lynn, welcome to iRun Radio.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So tell me a little bit about how you got into running and what running does for you and what kinds of events you've done, and then we'll talk a little bit more about your New York experience.
Okay. Well, I got into running, I'd say, about 8 years ago. My sisters always ran, and I started running with them. I had gone with my sister to see the Boston Marathon. She was running, and it was really inspirational. It's an amazing race. There were so many people there, and everyone with one goal. And I just saw they looked like regular people, and I thought, you know what, I think I can do this. And I started to get into it, and I started feeling good, and everything just went from there.
And tell me a little bit about some of the events you did while you were hoping to get into New York. I understand you applied over and over again to New York. We'll tell that story in a moment. But what did you do in the meantime?
Yeah, I've done a few races. My first race was the 5K at Scotiabank in Toronto. And since then, I've done quite a few half marathons, Ottawa, Montreal. I did the Scotiabank Marathon about 6 years ago, and then since then I've actually got into triathlon also, and I've done a few Olympics, and I've done a half Ironman in Lake Placid and Muskoka. So I'm sort of all over the map.
Yeah, and I understand you're into skiing and snowshoe running, and you're a well-rounded athlete, and you like all kinds of fitness.
Yeah, and I think that's it's about fitness more than anything. I'm average runner, average athlete, but it's just that feeling of being fit, and I guess the endorphins, maybe just enjoying your day. Yeah, in the winter, I do enjoy snowshoeing, cross-country skiing. Snowshoe running is a ton of fun. I've got into that. There's a few local races around in the Ottawa area. And it just sort of makes the time pass, makes the winter go by a little more quickly.
And I understand you often run with your students and your coaching at your school as well?
Yeah, so I've been the cross-country coach and the track coach for a few years, and I really enjoy it. So what we'll do is whenever we practice three times a week, and I'll run with them usually, especially in the warm-up. We all start together in the warm-up as a group. And then the faster ones will take off, and then we'll meet again at the end for a cool down. So it gives us a real sense of camaraderie, and I really try to get the kids to feel that sense of camaraderie, like they're part of something bigger, and they really do appreciate it. And we have a lot of fun, even though everyone is a little bit of a different ability, different speed, we all have a lot of fun at the end.
Sounds great. Now, tell me a little bit about how often you tried to get into New York City. You wanted to run the New York Marathon. How often did you apply?
Yeah, I think it probably would have been about 5 times I applied. I had gone down and watched it, the race, with I had a sister that was running it, and So I went down to watch. I ran the 5K. And same thing, I looked around and I'm like, this is something that I want to do. It's kind of magical in the city. The whole city comes alive around it. And I had applied that year that she went, but I didn't get in. It's really, really difficult to get in on the lottery.
Yeah, very difficult. And they used to have a rule that if you didn't get in the first four or the first three times, then you automatically got in the fourth time, but they scrapped that rule. So that didn't help you.
Yeah. No, it didn't.
So
I think I just missed it.
Yeah. So you didn't think you were going to run it this year, and then something happened. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was pretty sure I wasn't going to run. I had applied again to the lottery, and two of my sisters had both got in with time qualification, so they had gotten in the lottery. But no, I had got my rejection letter, and but then about a month later, I guess, I got an email, and it was from Tata Consultancy Services. That's who the sponsors the race, the TSC. TCS, New York. TCS, New York City Marathon. So they're a global IT services and consulting company, and they're big supporters of technology in education. So they gave 50 spots to teachers in the race. And so they gave 50 spots plus a full VIP treatment from start to finish. So, yeah, because I was originally turned down, I figured it was over. But then I got this email, and then I had to write two essay questions about the importance that I placed on the STEM subjects, like science, tech, engineering, and math, and so the importance I placed on those subjects and running at my school. And then I'm a tech teacher, and I'm also the running coach, so those things were really important to me. And I just wrote about that, and I was chosen as one of the 50. I think there were about 400 of us in Canada and the U.S. that applied.
Okay, well, that's great. And tell me about the VIP treatment. What's involved in that?
Oh, this was amazing. So TCS really knows how to do things right. We had, the day before, we had a pasta dinner. And then the day of the race, we had our own coach buses to the start. When we got there, we had our own tent with a heater, so a heated tent, and food and drinks. And if you walked around behind the tent, there was this spectacular view of the New York City skyline. They had things, everything you could want in there, like Band-Aids, Vaseline. We had our own porta potties, and then we had our own baggage check too. So at the end of the race, instead of doing a long walk all the way around, right after the finish line, we had our own exit, and to get to our own baggage check and ponchos.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. And then they took you down to Tavern on the Green, which is kind of an upscale restaurant where they had full buffet, drinks. It was incredible. It really felt special. I felt like a minor celebrity. And it was pretty special to be rewarded and recognized by TCS for being a coach and a teacher.
And what was the race like? Tell me about your New York Marathon experience after you tried for so many years to get in.
Yeah, it was worth it. It was a beautiful sunny day. The weather was perfect. So there were a ton of spectators. I just felt like the whole city came out to party along the race route. There was bands and DJs. I ran past people dancing in the median. There was a school band playing the Rocky theme, and everyone's just yelling for you to keep going. It's really like being a rock star for the day.
Yeah, it's very cool. And New York is very special. And you got not just the New York experience, but the New York VIP experience, which is great. So
I don't think I'll ever do another race feeling like that again.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's a little bit like if you fly first class and then you have to go back to economy at some point. Nothing will ever measure up.
No.
Lynn, if there's one message that you would leave with your students about why you run, what would it be?
Well, you know, the night before the race, my sister, who's a pretty experienced runner, said to me, she says, the last 10K are going to be mentally tough, so you better figure out why you're out there. So I thought about it for a while and during the race, and I decided the marathon teaches me patience, especially since I'm not always the most patient person. The race is a metaphor for life. Like, sometimes it feels easy, and other times it gets tough, and you might have to slow down and refuel. But if you keep moving forward, you'll reach your goal. So in the last 10K of the race, I thought a lot about my students and my own two children that are both, one's in first-year university, that is in grade 9, and they're both facing a lot of changes. And I just want all of those kids to know that if you're patient and you face one challenge at a time, you're gonna reach your goal. If I can make it through this race, you can make it through whatever is challenging you at this moment in time.
That's a very powerful message and very well said.
I had a few hours to really think about it.
Yeah. Well, Lynn, congratulations, yeah, not just on the New York Marathon, but on everything you're doing to inspire and coach the kids in your life. And well done on New York. Thank you so much for joining us on iRun Radio.
Okay, thanks for having me.
That's Lynn McQuaig, a teacher in Cornwall, Ontario. Coming up next, how a Toronto runner pulled off his fastest half marathon ever.
iRun Radio is brought to you in part by New Balance Canada. New Balance is a proud sponsor of the Scotiabank Toronto Waterfront Marathon, fitting elite Olympic marathoners like Reed Coolset, and also making shoes that are ideal for you.
Sam Heath is a runner from Toronto and an executive with Tim Hortons. A few weeks ago, he ran his fastest half marathon ever. Sam, thank you for joining us.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Great to be here.
So you took 5 minutes off your personal best in the half marathon in Toronto, and 5 minutes is a lot of time when you're going so fast. You went from a 127 in your PB to a 122. That's a big jump in speed and percentage. So how did you do it? What went so well for you?
Well, so I changed my bio on Instagram earlier this year from I am bad at training to training works. And it really comes down to following coach's advice, really, for the first time in my running career.
So it used to say I am bad at training?
Yeah. Yeah, I had great training plans, and I executed probably 50 or 60% of them. So moved that up to about 90%, actually did the runs that as prescribed, and it had a remarkable impact.
Okay, well, that's good to know. That's really good advice. So what kinds of workouts were you doing? And I guess having a coach is part of what worked for you then, because sometimes we need that accountability, right?
Yeah, the folks at the High Park Rogue Runners, like to thank them if I can, but they had me doing pretty consistently 2 speed workouts a week, 2 shorter or recovery or easy runs, and 1 long run on Sunday. And just I think the variation in the speed workouts, they never got boring. They had very specific goals of run this many repeats of 400 or 800, whatever it was, at a specific goal time, that had a huge, huge benefit on race day.
We should take a step back and point out that you haven't been running for that long. You started running in your mid-30s, and that was maybe 7 or 8 years ago, and now you're still having some success. You're still getting faster and faster, even in your mid-40s.
Yeah, I started running when I was 36, when I was running, I had IT band issues, and I struggled to complete more than about 2K before my knees started killing me. So I worked through that and plateaued for a while by the time I turned around 40. And this year has really been when I've started now cutting even more time off. But I came to running pretty late in life, and I've taken to it pretty strongly. This year, I turned 44 earlier this year, has really been a breakout year for me. So it's nice to know that you can continue to get fast and quite fast, even well into middle age.
Yeah, I mean, those are some fast times at any age, but that's phenomenal, a 122 and a half marathon. So I understand you've changed your diet recently as well, is that right?
Yeah, I've cut back on my two donuts a day diet. I now try to do 0 to 1. I think that's a big benefit.
Right, 0 to 1 donuts, okay.
Yeah, I highly recommend that.
Yeah.
But just paying some attention to what I put in my body, a few years ago, before the Chicago Half Marathon, I was using one of the nutrition tracking apps, and after having some problems during the half there, realized I'd consumed more than a pound of refined sugar within 36 hours of starting that race. So, but don't do that.
A pound of refined sugar in what form?
Oh, a combination of a large sundae after dinner and some energy bars the night before and a bunch of sugar on my breakfast cereal. It really adds up if you're not paying a lot of attention.
Yeah. And you've done marathons as well. We can talk in a moment about your experience in Reykjavik. I'd love to hear about that race. But it seems like you've had a huge jump forward in the half marathon in particular. And do you think your diet is part of that?
Yeah, I think so. I used to really, really struggle during races with GI issues. And I finally went to the doctor and said, you know, what's causing this? What can I do? Is there anything I can do? And after talking to me 5 minutes about what I was eating before, looked at me like an idiot that maybe stopped that.
Right.
So, you know, less beer, less sugar, you know, more vegetables. It's all of the basics, but for some reason, it takes everybody needs that wake-up moment of the particular conversation that convinces them to start eating better.
And you mentioned that you've been running now for something like 8 years, and you're seeing some progress, you're getting faster. What is it you enjoy about being a long-distance runner?
I honestly actually think it's the progress that I enjoy. It's really fun for me at the end of a season, the beginning of a season, to lay out, you know, here's my goal, here's how I'm feeling, here's what I think I can improve in my training regimen, and see whether I can, you know, put those things into practice and cut some time off. It's a really nice quantitative way of seeing whether you can meet your commitments to yourself during the year.
Yeah, it's
and at my age, frankly, it's also I want to see at what point that my body starts betraying me and not letting me get faster. But until that point, I'm going to keep doing this.
Yeah, and you might need a different form of motivation at that point, but I hope it doesn't come for some time. There is something nice and quantifiable about running, unlike so many other things in life that have ambiguous outcomes that or where there's a lot of gray area. Running is, certainly if you're keeping track of your times and your progress in training, it's very black and white, isn't it?
It is. There's also the nice thing, the humbling thing of every time I run a race, I see whether I've caught up to Ed Whitlock. And right now, I think I'm chasing down Ed Whitlock's times when he was in his early 70s, which is better than, you know, his late 70s and early 80s.
Right. Okay, so you're measuring yourself against Ed Whitlock's, what records he posted. So you're now starting to compete with a 70-year-old Ed Whitlock as opposed to an 80-year-old Ed Whitlock.
Exactly. It's a big, big game.
Yeah. I remember we did a stat in the magazine about when he did his sub-3-hour marathon in Toronto 1 year and then broke a world record for that age. I remember we listed all the people of all the other ages younger than him that he beat in that race, how many, you know, where he would have finished among 45-year-old men. And he still would have been, you know, in the top 15% or something like that of the 40-year-old men, the 45-year-old men, the 50-year-old men, and at the time he was, whatever, 75.
He is an absolute inspiration to all of us heading towards his age.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the Reykjavik Marathon in Iceland. Tell me about that experience. You obviously had a great result, but tell me a little bit about what the race is like.
So I highly recommend destination marathons. We got there, my wife did it as well. We got there a week before the race to get lots of time to acclimatize to the time change and recover from the flight. But it's a fantastic race around the city of Reykjavik, up a couple hills, down a couple hills, but largely flat. You get to see everything there. And the weather tends to be, even though it's the middle of summer, quite cool. Iceland is well named. But just overall fantastic experience. The Prime Minister is out to kick off the race. Everybody really gets into it.
And what's it like visiting the country for those people who haven't been there?
It's if you're from the east or west coast, I think you'd find a lot to remind you of home, or even from up in the Shield area of Ontario. Lots of rocks, lots of bluffs, some very, very small forests. But it has sort of a really wonderful stark beauty where the city itself just feels like it's been carved out of nature and wedged in there, like it's barely hanging on. Reminds you of the ephemeral nature of civilization.
Yeah, very cool. And I understand there was a bit of a glitch with this year's event, that, or at least when you did it, that the course wasn't measured properly. Is that right?
Yeah, so I crossed the finish line at a 3:03:15, which was over a 10-minute PB. I was pretty ecstatic. That was an 11.5-minute Boston qualifier for me. And then 2 weeks later, got an email saying we accidentally measured the course 213 meters short, which led the Boston folks to say that because you didn't run a regulation marathon, your time doesn't count. So that was an unfortunate mistake, but they were very good about apologizing for it. I think it's the only time it's happened.
Yeah. So you thought you had qualified for Boston, but then you didn't because of the course. But I guess you know now you can do it if you find another race, so you can go out and do it. It's not like you made it by 20 seconds or something.
Well, I did it already. I went and ran Hamilton yesterday on 2 weeks of training and ran a 3:05:16. So we're good.
Okay, glad to hear that. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I wasn't aware of that. So tell me about that race.
Hamilton's lovely. I did a half there a couple of years ago, but the first 10 or 15K of the race are just around the mountain top of Hamilton, beautiful view of the shores of Lake Ontario all the way into Toronto, and then the net downhill is a nice little bonus. So that's a medium-sized race, I guess, but really well-organized. Really appreciated it, and I had a great time out there with about a dozen other rogue runners running the half and full.
Okay, so that means you'll be doing Boston in 2020, I guess, since 2019 is already taken care of.
Exactly, 4/20/2020. It's a great date.
All right. Well, congratulations on all you've done. You've had some great races this year, some huge success. You're getting faster at 44. I like the sound of that, and it sounds like you're enjoying what you're doing, so keep going. Sam, thank you so much for joining us on iRun Radio.
Thanks very much.
That's Sam Heath from Toronto. Coming up next week on iRun Radio, more great stories, including how a 69-year-old runner qualified for the Boston Marathon once again. Hope you can join us for the next edition of iRun Radio. Thank you for listening. Have a great week.